Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, a very special and interesting guest, council member Justin Brannon. Born and raised in Brooklyn, the son of a record salesman and early childhood educator. After attending Fordham University, where he studied journalism, Justin embarked on a career as a professional musician. His band released several albums and toured the world, traveling over 50 countries across 5 continents. While working at New York City radio station, Brannon got involved in union organizing and fought to recover unpaid wages for his coworkers. He then served as chief of staff to his predecessor, council member Vincent Gentile, and director of intergovernmental affairs at the Department of Education, where he helped oversee the expansions of the universal pre-K. Brannon was elected to the city council in 2017 from a crowded field of 10 candidates to represent Southeast Brooklyn's 43rd council district. He was reelected to a 2-year term in 2021, where he now serves as chairman of the Finance Committee. A longtime believer in the importance of making good government work effectively and to create opportunities for working middle-class families, Brannon has vowed to always fight for the little guy. Councilmember Brannon, welcome to Reaching Out.
Thank you, President Floyd. It's great to see you again. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Now, our radio audience can't see this, but the audience on YouTube can see a couple of pictures behind you. Miles Davis, and there's a poster behind you of the Smiths.
I love that you know the Smiths. It blows my mind, and it reminds me of, I've always known that I liked you for some reason, and now I know why.
Well, I consider myself a music connoisseur.
Clearly.
Music Man Greg is my nickname, and I know music from all over. The Smiths was in the 80s, and that was sort of the alternative UK music coming from overseas.
That's right.
And along with the Smiths, well, one of the songs is featured in the movie The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler. It's a group called General Public.
Oh, sure.
Whenever you've done that, and before General Public, I believe they had another name. They were called, what was General Public called? Can't think of it, but they changed their name to General Public. So they had some nice hits. So those guys coming out of that era. So I remember that era.
That's good. That's very good trivia.
Yeah. And I can't think of it now, but
I think there were people in General Public who were in Dexy's Midnight Runners and the Specials.
Oh, but that wasn't the name. But that's good. Dexy's Midnight Run. Come on, Eileen.
Come on, Eileen. That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
So you are the Finance Committee Chair.
That's right.
The City Council's budget was adopted, but not without some controversy, especially regarding the $215 million in cuts to the education. Can you tell us what is going on with that? The controversy, where it is right now, as this radio show is being aired, and it will probably change afterwards, but there's been a judge's decision to halt that portion of the budget. Can you tell us what's going on?
Sure. So we knew back in February, the budget process starts in earnest really in January, right? It's a 6-month process that ends with a budget adoption in June before the new fiscal year starts July 1st. So back in February, when we had our initial preliminary budget hearings, we were aware that the DOE was forecasting a $215 million cut due to federal stimulus funds, COVID emergency funds that are running out. Now, a $215 million cut in February in the colossal multi-billion dollar DOE budget is really in the abstract. And I don't think that, speaking candidly, I don't think that any of my colleagues really understood the exponential impact of that small gap would make until schools got their budgets for September. And the timing of that was not ideal because we had already done a lot of months and months of negotiations with the mayor in negotiating a budget, including that $215 million gap. But again, because it was within this colossal, you know, $30 billion DOE budget, it was very much abstract, and it wasn't clear to us what the effects were going to be on the classroom. Now, the issue really has become, the real issue now is not about getting another one-shot check and filling this gap, because ultimately, if we don't fix the FSF, which is the Fair Student Funding Formula, if we don't fix that formula, we're going to continue pouring water into a leaky budget, a leaky bucket. FSF, I mean, I'm old enough to remember a couple of years ago when we finally achieved 100% FSF funding under Mayor de Blasio and Speaker Johnson. When the council got 100% FSF funding, that was like it was the Holy Grail, right? We did not think it could get better than that. We had fought, advocates had fought to get 100% FSF funding since 2007. So when we finally got the 100% FSF funding, it was a huge, huge, huge victory. I can't stress that enough. Then the unthinkable happened and the pandemic hit, COVID hit. And schools, the silver lining, I guess, of COVID was that schools were able to see, teachers were able to see what their budgets would look like if they didn't have to count every penny. I come from a household of teachers. My mom was a teacher. My wife is a teacher. My aunt, my godmother, my uncle, everybody in my family are teachers, public school or private. I'm the only one that didn't become a teacher. I know very well what the teachers that truly care, how much money they spend out of their own pocket to give their classrooms what they need. During COVID was the first time, thanks to the federal stimulus money, it was the first time that teachers were able to see what their budgets would look like if they had what they needed to hire an extra para, an extra art teacher. And it was fantastic. The problem is that money now is running out. And what's left of it is being obligated and allocated to next year, so there's not a fiscal cliff. What de Blasio did was he was taking that money and filling the gap that was, that has been created by enrollment. Now, we have a serious conversation. We have to have a serious conversation about enrollment. The fact is, the numbers show that our public schools in this city have lost 7 to 10% in enrollment over the past 4 or 5 years. That's almost 100,000 kids. And what the budget folks at City Hall are saying, just strictly from a numbers perspective, they're saying, look, if a school is being funded for 1,000 kids, but they've only had 500 kids for the past 2 years, continuing to fund them at these emergency levels with such a loss is just not sustainable. And frankly, I agree with that. You can't keep funding a school for 1,000 kids if they only have 500 kids. The problem is right now, FSF is insufficient. So what we thought was the Holy Grail, what we thought could not get any better, is we're now realizing is insufficient. So right now, my colleagues in the council, led by Speaker Adams, is we're trying to fight to at the very least put back that 215 million peg that was discussed back in February, and you know that we saw in the budget that we just passed. Put that back and then live to fight another day to work with our partners in Albany to fix this formula, because going forward, constantly writing a check to fill this hole is just not the answer. It's not sustainable. We have to have a serious conversation about enrollment. We also have to have a serious conversation about the FSF formula, in that certain schools need to be weighted differently. Just because a school has lost enrollment doesn't mean that the school now should be in danger of losing all of their teachers or losing all of their art teachers. Art and music in public school is a huge personal issue for me. And it breaks my heart, because the reason why I fight so hard for it is because I'm seeing right now what happens, that when schools have to make tough choices with their budgets, the first to go is art and music. Right? Math, science, they never think about letting go of those folks. Art and music, creative, it's always the first to go. So we need to do something to fix the moment that we're in right now. But we really then have to have a serious conversation going forward, how we level things out, how we are sober about the reality that our public schools have lost a lot of kids, but also that we're not giving our classrooms the money that they need. Chancellor Banks came in super hot, saying he wants to cut the waste at Tweed, at DOE Central. I used to work for the DOE. I would agree that there's plenty of waste at DOE Central and bloated procurement contracts and whatnot. The last thing we should be doing is cutting the funds that go to our kids, that go to the classrooms, that go to the teachers. That's the last thing that should be on the chopping block. So what the council is saying is, look, you've got a colossal DOE budget. There's got to be a way to find this money, move it from somewhere else. Let's figure out where we can take it to fill this gap right now. And then let's have a serious conversation going forward so we can fix this and make it sustainable. Because, Greg, otherwise, we're going to have this problem every year. If enrollment keeps trending down, every year there's going to be this gap. And there's going to be this gap because the formula is creating this gap. The formula is always going to be tied to enrollment, right? School funding is always going to have to be tied somehow to enrollment. It's a matter of how do we weight it so schools aren't completely falling off a fiscal cliff. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, I think it's just as important to fix a problem right now and address a problem right now as it is to look to the future and make sure that you're taking the long view, so that we're not in the same situation again next summer when we're trying to pass the FY24 budget. So this lawsuit has sort of put things on pause as we figure out, you know, how that plays out, as the mayor's side figures out how that plays out. But right now, we're trying to work out a deal with the administration to fill this hole for FY23, and then to live to fight another day and to do the right thing by our public schools. I'm a public school kid. I want our teachers to have what they need to teach our kids. I want our classrooms to be funded. There's nothing more important than a quality public school education in our city. But we have to come to terms with the reality that we've lost a lot of kids in our system for whatever reason. And we've got to come up with it. We have to tweak the formula for this new moment.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. With us is our very special guest, Council Member Justin Brannon, and we're talking about school budget. And we talk about a little music. And you mentioned music and arts being cut. And you know, we're fond of music and arts. And we believe that the council will come up with an idea of how to fund that $215 million and live to fight another day. You formed a housing task force to help address the city's affordable housing crisis. Okay. A recent study explored the idea of converting vacant office space into housing. Tell us your thoughts and if you're considering the findings of the study.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Greg. So, you know, I think that COVID has shown us that we're really going to be in a new reality here. I don't know if the 9-to-5 workday that we knew before COVID is ever going to return. We just don't know, right? And when you look at Manhattan, Manhattan is really a fragile ecosystem. And if the office building is not full of workers, then the salad place downstairs suffers, the dry cleaner suffers, the guy with the coffee cart suffers, right? It's a very fragile ecosystem. And most of Manhattan, you know, in between, you know, from 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. is a ghost town, because Manhattan is where people come to work, right? I often say that Manhattan might be the economic engine of the city, but the oil and the fuel for that engine really lives in the outer boroughs. And I think that we've got to come to terms with that, the reality that a lot of folks are working remotely. You know, if I'm the CFO of a company and I'm my company is currently renting 30 floors of office space in a building, and over the past 2.5 years, I've only used two of those floors, and my company is still making money and still working efficiently. Well, I don't think that CFO is going to look to renew that lease. So that becomes the reality of what are we going to do with all this vacant office space? And you hear a lot of conversations, people, you know, sort of wondering, can we turn some of this vacant office space into affordable housing? Some people say yes, some people say no. Everyone is waxing, you know, philosophically about if it's possible. Well, it hasn't worked here, it hasn't worked there. Last year, I wrote a bill, I passed a bill that became law that creates a task force to actually figure out and explore opportunities to convert obsolete office building space to affordable housing, to schools, to whatever it may be. So basically, Greg, what I said was, look, let's stop wondering, let's stop arguing over whether it's possible or not, and let's get a bunch of smart people in a room. Let's create a blue ribbon panel of folks in labor, in real estate, in construction, in, you know, planning, in housing, obviously, to sit down and figure out if we can do this, if it's possible. And so Local Law 43, which I passed last year, that Mayor Adams is now enacting, creates a task force of 12 members that will sit down and focus on the future of office buildings in our city to ensure that our city's central business districts remain vibrant and adaptable and successful over the long term. And then ultimately, the task force will recommend legal and regulatory changes, which obviously will allow for these conversions if we think it makes sense. And they'll recommend these changes to support productive new uses for obsolete office buildings by the end of this year. So the idea is to have a blueprint by the end of this year. Now, the task force could come back and say, you know what, we put our best and brightest minds in a room and we figured out it might work for a handful of office buildings, but overall, it doesn't make sense, right? Converting office buildings into housing or labs or schools, it's too expensive because of the way the buildings, you know, whatever it is, fine. But let's actually sit down and figure that out. Let's stop talking about it. Let's stop arguing about it. And let's sit down and really figure it out. So that's what we're doing. So the mayor created what I believe is he's calling the Office Adaptive Reuse Task Force. And it puts together a bunch of really smart minds in a room to figure this out. And let's see, right? Because otherwise, I don't know that these massive office buildings are coming back. And if we have a serious housing crisis, an enduring housing crisis, why would we let any vacant shelter sit empty if we have a housing crisis? Let's find a way to use these buildings and to turn these buildings into something useful. So I'm optimistic, but I'm a pragmatist and I'm a realist. And if the task force comes back and says, look, we looked at it, it's too expensive, it doesn't make sense, fine. But let's at least have a real conversation. Let's stop writing op-eds and arguing over, oh, it's not possible because this and that. I really want folks to sit down and figure it out. And I think that's what's going to happen here. And I look forward to, you know, the task force will publish its recommendations to in conjunction with the Department of City Planning by the end of this year, by the end of 2022.
I think you're right about the city not coming back to what we used to be known as the normal, where you have a 5-day work week, your offices are full of people. I agree with you. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And I think we have to be realistic about that, right? We have to be realistic about people have seen and companies have really seen that that remote work for certain companies, for certain industries, it works. And again, if I'm a CFO and my job is to focus on the bottom line of a company, I'm going to go to my CEO and say, look, we've been renting 40 floors of office space for the past 40 years. And now we're making more money than we've ever made before. And we're only using five floors. They are not renewing that lease. That's just the bottom line. And
right.
We need to figure that out. And I think we need to figure that out before it be, we need to figure it out now before it really becomes a crisis, a real crisis.
You have taken a leadership role in procurement reform.
Sure.
How can eliminating the red tape in the contracting process help more vendors and the general public?
Sure, that's a great question, Greg. I've allocated, since I got elected in 2018, I've allocated over $50 million to renovating different parks and playgrounds in my council district. A lot of these parks and playgrounds haven't seen any renovations in decades, right? Sometimes I joke with my local parents, and I'm only half joking when I say, Mrs. Jones, I hope that playground is finished before your son goes to Yale. And I'm only half joking because we all know how long these projects take through working with the city. And procurement reform is just not a sexy issue. It's not something that people get elected on. It's not something that people are interested in talking about. But it's actually, it should be a sexy issue. It should be something people want to talk about because it affects so many of us and it affects taxpayers, where my job as a council member is to get as much of a return on that investment for my constituents, for taxpayers in my district. And if I'm bringing back all this money, but nothing is actually getting done because everything is taking so long, people get angry at me, and rightfully so. But I have there's no excuse for it, because what's happening now, and like, for instance, you've seen articles about how much it costs to build a bathroom in a park. When the average person says, you know what, if my Uncle Jerry could renovate a bathroom in a weekend, and you're telling me that if the Parks Department does it, it's going to take 2 years and cost $1.5 million to build a bathroom. It's just indefensible. And what we've realized is that it's a little bit of both. It's not so much the city's fault. It's not the contractor's fault. But what happens is, like, a lot of people say, well, how come, how come it costs so much? The city puts out an RFP. They say, look, we need to build a new football field at the so-and-so high school. They don't decide how much that's going to be. The cost comes from the bids, right? So the bids come in at super high prices. Now, the bids don't come in at super high prices because the contractors are looking to fleece the city. Look, the contractors have to make a little money for their work, but they're coming in at those high bids because of how hard it is to work with the city and how expensive it is to work with the city. So that's why parks cost $4 million to renovate. That's why bathrooms cost $2 million to renovate, because the city has to deal with, you know, the contractors have to deal with this. So we finally have a deputy mayor, Lorraine Grillo, who's fantastic, who understands procurement reform and why it's so important. So I'm hoping we see some action on it, because again, it's an issue that is really wonky and people don't understand why it's so important, but it really, really is. And I think that if we explain it to people on that level, that procurement reform and dysfunction is the reason why these city projects are taking so long, I think you're going to see a lot of support for fixing that.
We got to ask you to come back.
I can talk to you all day, man. Come on.
We're going to ask you to talk music. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With me, our very special guest, Council Member Justin Brennan. And before he goes, he mentioned General Public, which is one of my favorite bands from the 80s. But they used to be known as the English Beat.
Oh, the English Beat. Right? I said the Beat. I forgot the English.
Yeah, the English Beat. Yeah. And they had a song called Mirror in the Bathroom.
Mirror in the Bathroom.
Which is so appropriate to what we were talking about.
I love it, man. Thank you for having me. Thanks for all you do for working people in the city.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.